My name is Harley Stroh, and I'm the line editor for the Goodman Games Dungeon Crawl Classics. And you are about to enter the dungeon of the Vorpal Network. Snickeder snack. Roll for initiative.
Hey, this is Oscar Garza of White Wolf. You listen to the Gamer's Haven.
It's game time.
Quiet, please. I am analyzing.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.
Is the next step the transplantation of the human brain?
Ballsy. Stupid, but ballsy.
Stand by for action.
Welcome to the party, pal.
Okay.
Remember, we're not dealing with an intelligence on our own level.
Bring in the logic probe!
Ooh! End of line.
This podcast is supported by RPG Now, the leading source of indie role-playing games, with over 10,000 RPG titles from over 500 creators and publishers. There are new RPG treasures to discover every day at www.rpgnow.com.
Welcome back to the Gamer's Haven podcast. Some of us are already leaving, I guess.
No. Yeah.
I'm letting out the beasts of hell to take care of the rat infestation problem we have.
You have a rat infestation problem?
We do hear it.
Giant mutant rats.
The 6-foot-long rats that have been wandering down the tunnels?
Yeah,
Thank you, Jeremy.
I thought those were Jeremy's things.
Yeah, they were.
Oh. Did you lose interest again?
Yes.
Damn you. It's okay. I genetically altered the watch cats, and they've been going after them.
Nice,
see,
nice.
I'm just feeding the cycle of life there.
Exactly.
Or the circle of life.
Circle of life. If you break out in a song, I'm going to punch you. Okay, yeah. We're good then.
Ask him what he did with Mansquito.
What did you do with Mansquito?
I just...
Don't forget Paulita. The Mansquito is going to be very pissed if you get
Paulina.
Rid of him.
Well, true.
Paulina
really,
the
Mansquito.
Whatever she wants to be called, that's what we call her because we're terrified.
He'll be okay in a few days.
Once his wings grow back.
He didn't need them anyway.
Sigh.
He is an experiment anyway.
But we are back on track as far as getting episodes out. We are recording on this fine April Fool's Day, April 1st, 1999. So give me an idea.
1999?
Yes.
Really? It's 1999?
Yes, we traveled back in time using a TARDIS that I found at the half-off store.
Yes.
Used.
Half-off the TARDIS or like... So that's why we only went to 1999. It was only half
exactly.
The size.
Well,
correct.
Well, the size doesn't matter. You know, it's time.
It's how you use it.
Yeah.
Apparently, it's how we use it. Yes.
Why did we go to 1999 then?
Well, it's
but
a good
this
year.
Is April 1st,
1999.
And, I've been using the time machine far too much, so I'm all my brain's a bit addled. But today we're talking about gaming stores and how much we love them and what we look for in them and all that crazy, crazy stuff. No, at
yeah,
some point,
like non-smelliness.
Yes, that'd be nice. But at some point, we do intend to get with our local game store owner, the local game store owner of the Good Game Store, Phil, over at Tabletop Game and Hobby, and to talk to him a little bit about gaming stores in general and whatnot. But until then, this is what's going to have to suffice. So,
and find out what happened back in 1999.
Find out what happened back. Well, he wasn't around. I don't know. He
was. Yes, he
around.
Was.
He was. He's been around for 14 years now. Yeah.
Yes, I've been going to a store since the store was first opened.
Yes. Yes. Good times. Good times. Plus, we have today on the show. We have some random encounters to go through, and our lovely three-parter as well. So,
what random encounters?
Well, we have they're random. We don't know until we roll them, and then doctor.
Doctor.
Oh, right.
Doctor.
We can't have the doctor on the show. He's copyrighted.
Oh, we can have him on the show as long as, you know, we don't, you know, piss off the BBC. But anyway.
We love the BBC.
Yes, we do.
We love the BBC. The BBC is the best American programming network anywhere.
Yes, the best American news ever.
Yeah.
The best American news is on the BBC.
And if they're listening, you know, we'd really like it if you would actually, like, release the individual seasons of all the old Doctor Who shows, because some of us would like to be able to watch it from the beginning to the end without having to search through countless thousands of various different DVDs and hopping and skipping through the seasons. Please?
Yeah, that took me about a year and a half. Anyway, we'll be back after this.
Gamers Haven and the Vorpal Network, in association with Pinnacle Entertainment Group, present A Thousand Monkeys Production.
Deadlands. Enough room to die.
An actual play recording of Deadlands Reloaded. Available for download at www.CanadianCrusaders.com.
This is the Vorpal Network.
Vorpal Network is the bomb, the cutting edge of geekdom. Comics, advice, D&D, movies, video games, RPGs. Finding it easy, just stay calm. VorpalNetwork.com.
My sniffling and snuffling. I appear to be coming down with a cold, or my allergies are acting up.
Oh, whine.
What can I say? At least I'm not whining about the surgery I had last week.
That's true. Those of you who are joining us late, or who haven't listened to the last episode,
we're in 1999.
And Nathan had his surgery. We traveled back in time, so technically he hasn't had his surgery yet, and Omai have gone cross-eyed, but anyway, there are machines trying to kill us, something about Skynet and Terminators, but anyway.
We're in an underground bunker, so they can't find us anyway.
Exactly. But then there are those things, those people at this place called Zion keep trying to come in here, and I keep telling them to go away. But
don't buy anything.
Like, yeah. Getting their weird retro steampunk mechs and yell at me, and I turn the DVD off. Anyway.
What the hell was that from?
Oh, mescaline trip.
I know what that is now. Yes. Okay. I'm sorry. Just logged into the World of Warcraft page so I could add a card to my World of Warcraft account so I can play. And the first thing they have on there is the new World of Warcraft dance battle system revealed.
Sweet!
They released an in-depth preview of a brand new feature coming soon to the World of Warcraft, the PvP dance battle system. If your new dance battle system will challenge you to make your move and let the best moves win. But even in the fiercest PvP dance-off, what matters is not where you're from.
Yes, we are recording this on April Fool's Day, so all of the wonderful April Fool's jokes that are out there on websites are popping up. It's rather entertaining. But,
yes, it's been quite amusing.
But today we are talking about gaming stores. And I guess we can also talk a bit about buying your stuff online. But
don't
really,
do it! Oh, wait.
Brick and mortar gaming stores.
You can buy stuff online if you want.
Oh, yeah.
There's some good deals out there.
I think the key thing is, you know, good gaming. Support your local good gaming store, not your crappy gaming store. If you go in and they treat you like you're an idiot, and don't go back.
Or the guy behind the counter is like a orc.
Yes.
No, we haven't run into that in a long time.
No. We did when we lived in Lawrence.
Yes,
numerous times. But hey, they went out of business, so who cares?
Only to get replaced with another one.
Amazingly. We are going to talk a bit about gaming stores today. Yeah, sort of what we look for in them and what impresses us and the ones we've been to various places. When I was growing up in Lawrence, we had a few gaming stores out there that sort of doubled as comic book shops mainly. It was a little later on, like really much later on, you know, past into the college years when we actually managed to get an actual gaming store in town that just had games. But unfortunately, it went out of business. And
that was sad.
Yeah,
that was a good story.
Very odd because we lived in a college town, and you'd expect a gaming store to do fairly well in a college town.
Are you talking about Jester's Attic?
Jester's Attic was a good place.
Yeah,
but he went out of business. Sadly, he was a nice guy, and I guess that sort of gets us on to the first thing is, what was good about that store? I mean, I liked it because it was bright, clean, and the guy actually treated you like a human being when you walked in. But
and he knew his stuff, too. Don't forget that.
Yeah. That's a key thing. Is most gaming stores you go out to, you have an owner sometimes who is a gamer that is just doing this because it's his hobby, you know. But I think the key thing is you want to find a place that is actually running it like a business.
That doesn't mean that gamers can't run one. But they have to run it like a
business. But you have to think of it, you know, there's nothing saying you can't be a gamer and run a game store. I'm just saying, you know, you can be a gamer and run a game store. It's just run it as a business, not as a hobby. You know? I think the chief annoyance I have when I go into a gaming store is, into a bad gaming store, I should say, is really I'm sold on customer service more than inventory nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
Because really, with the internet, you can get anything that you need. And often you can get it cheaper. So the reason I go to a game store is, well, if it's a good gaming store, and they make me feel welcome there, and they have a good, you know, product line, that sort of thing.
Sorry, I've got random music.
All right,
there we go. Yeah, we're back up and running.
Woohoo!
Sorry, time traveling again.
More time traveling.
I think we're in 1989.
That's okay.
No, the year is 1985.
Dude. Oh man. 85?
Yeah,
you need to turn the dial the other way.
Bad year, I know. Let's go back to 1963. Anything
I don't know
happen
if we can,
63?
I don't 63? Think we can go that far back. We
weren't Yeah, we can go back to 63. We just have to visit a comic book or a newsstand so we can buy some comics. If we go back to 1963.
A lot. They won't take our money.
We're going to go rob a newsstand in 1963. We might also take a trip by Dallas and see who it really is on the grassy knoll.
That was in 1964, wasn't it?
No, that was in 1963.
63?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Anyway, enough time traveling. Gaming stores.
Yes.
Was there gaming stores in 1963?
Most
no.
likely not. I think they're more something that came about in the 90s. Probably dovetailed straight from comic book shops.
Yes, because the early games like Dungeons and Dragons and stuff, surprisingly, from what I remember, you could buy them in the weirdest of places. Like I remember picking up an Advanced Dungeons and Dragons first edition rulebook for the Dungeon Master's Guide at Westlake Hardware, of all places. Very weird place to pick up a D&D book, but it was there. So, interesting places where you could get that sort of stuff.
Oh, that's probably why.
No, gaming stores came around. The advent of gaming stores actually started around the time that gaming started to become really popular, which was in the late 80s. Mm-hmm. A lot of comic book stores decided that they wanted to supplement their actual income and revenue by carrying these gaming books that seemed to be becoming really popular. In the late 80s, Dungeons & Dragons 2nd Edition, AD&D 2nd Edition, came out and was really popular, which is surprising considering they had 9 billion freaking books. And at that point, a lot of comic book stores started carrying, as well as hobby stores.
And bookstores.
Like Hobbytown and God, what was the other one? There was Hobbytown, there was another one.
Yeah, I can't remember the other one either.
Can't remember the name. There was one in Lawrence, but yeah, you had hobby stores, and really back in the 90s, that was really, well, yeah, back in the '80s, I should say. That was about it. Well, that comic book stores did carried some sometimes, yeah, but Ace Hardware, that is so funny.
Yeah. Actually, one of the other places we got some books when I was a kid was, of all places, was KB Toys.
Okay. That makes some vestige of sense.
Yeah. But the first gaming store that we actually had when I was a kid was actually a comic book store, which is now called The Gatekeeper in Topeka.
Yeah.
And I can't remember I can't for the life of me remember the original name of it. That wasn't the original name of it.
Yeah. But it was it changed its name to The Gatekeeper.
It was predominantly a comic book store.
But it is still there. It went from a comic book store to sort of a comic book and a gaming store plus an arcade, and then it went back to a comic book and gaming store, and now it's just a comic book store again.
Yeah, so, it's predominantly comics. They do still sell some game books, mm-hmm, but it's very limited.
Yeah, very, very small selection.
Yeah. I remember when they had the arcade, though. I used to go play Gauntlet there.
Mm-hmm. Well, they had a Planet Pinball there.
Really? A full Planet Pinball?
It was a Planet Pinball, yeah.
Yeah, I miss Planet Pinball.
Yes. But anyway.
Anyways. Yeah, so it was actually in the mid to late 80s that the gaming stores started to really start to appear, and they were, most of them were hybrid stores from comic book stores. It wasn't until the 90s that we saw stores solely devoted to gaming.
Yeah. I think the first truly my brother got me into gaming, so I mean he would generally show up with the gaming stuff, and the first time I remember going someplace and buying gaming stuff had to have been at TNT Comics, mm-hmm, in Lawrence, which was another one of those sort of half gaming, half, you know, half comic book stuff.
And they didn't do just comics either; they did collectible cars and stuff too.
That was around the time Magic the Gathering came out. Yeah,
yeah. They were one of the places that offered me a lot of money for. I had the old Star Wars collectible cars that they came out with. I had two of the six limited edition 6,000 run foil etched cards.
Mm-hmm.
And they offered me like $100 for each one, and I refused to give them up. I still have them. They're only cards I have in like those hard plastic cases. But that was the early 90s, like 92.
Yeah.
I remember TNT Comics. Actually, the first game store I went to where I bought my own personal gaming books from was actually Comic Corner.
Mm-hmm.
And Quality Comics. I used back when they actually sold a lot of game books from Quality Comics. Mm-hmm.
And Comic Corner became the Battle Zone. Quality Comics is still there.
Yep, Quality Comics is actually still doing business, and actually apparently is still doing pretty well.
No, it's about the only comic book store in town down there. Oh, there's another one.
Yeah, there's the one all the way down there. I can't remember the name of it.
It's down by Game Guy. Anyway.
Yeah, I've only been in there a couple times. It's the company that was what's left of what was TNT Comics after it was bought out and moved downtown.
Right, but I mean that does sort of, they go hand in hand a lot of times as comic books and game stores. A lot of times, if you don't know where a game store is, you could go to your local comic store if you know where that is, and they might be able to point you in the right direction. Sometimes, don't always go to a hobby store actually, because
places like Hastings and
Hastings. What I'm saying is I was talking to a guy out here who went to a hobby store that's literally just down the street from Tabletop.
Uh-huh.
And he asked him, "It's like, well, I'm looking for like the more rare board games and the and role playing games and stuff." And the guy says, "Oh, I don't think there's any place like that in town." And Tabletop is literally just down the street.
Yeah, that was Hobbytown, USA.
No, it's not that one. It's literally just across the street next to Hooters, I think.
Really?
And it's not Hobbytown. I can't remember the name of it.
Huh, right now, I haven't heard of that one then. I'm going to have to check that store out.
But it doesn't matter. But hobby stores are a good are probably the place you don't want to go check at this point, because I don't know of any hobby store that carries RPG stuff anymore.
Not anymore.
Let alone even out. Most of them don't carry miniatures. Yeah. If they carry miniatures, it's going to be the little army guys.
It's going to be historic. It's going to be historical stuff.
But and most of the time they're not even going to have that. But Hobbytown USA isn't going to doesn't have anything. And most hobby stores, Michaels and Hobby Lobby don't have anything. Don't even try going to a mass marketplace like that.
Sometimes, it used to be, I don't know about anymore, sometimes like Walmarts and places in their book
section. It depends on the distribution that a company has. Like Wizards of the Coast does have a distribution, has enough of distribution that you can sometimes find their stuff at a Walmart. You can always find it at like a Borders or a Hastings or a Media
sometimes
Play.
Sometimes randomly check out the toy section. You'd be surprised. Occasionally go, what am I supposed to do with this RPG stuff? Well, we'll put it in the toys.
Well, I think it comes down to it that a lot of people lot of the mundanes out there don't really know what an RPG is.
That what we're calling the civilians now?
Yes. The normals out there.
The normals. I like the mundane better.
The mundanes.
That means it sounds like we are in the know.
We're special.
We are special because we have a podcast.
But we're hiding
and
in
they
a
don't.
Bunker in 1960.
We're a lot better than that Jeff Greiner guy over at the Tome.
I mean, 100 shows.
He's not like
slow and steady is the way to go, man. Slow and steady.
How are we even recording this back in 1961?
Exactly. We're recording this in 1999 or 1985.
1962.
I'm not turning back the dial.
We're way up ahead of everyone else.
1959.
Was this house even built in 1962?
Yes, it was.
Okay. We're probably sitting in someone else's
living room
now.
Yes.
So, yeah.
Yes, I'm wondering when they're going to come in and yell at us.
1948.
Basically, they had had microwaves back then and refrigerators with ice makers. Anyway, and a bread maker.
It's called the oven.
Some point, we're going to come to peasants with spears. So.
Yes. And if they knew, we're throwing Jeremy to them.
Right. Now, if we keep going back, we might run into the Kansas Indians.
Well, time and space, though. We may be traveling through space, too.
Well, we could. I mean, theoretically.
Time and relative dimensions in space.
Yes. Anyways, back to the gaming store.
Yes. But once you've exhausted the whole hobby store thing...
Which is good for other stuff in gaming, though.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, we've talked about that, like, in our miniatures episode and other places. Those are great places to go for gaming accessories, you know?
Yeah, things that...
It's really never going to... I don't remember ever finding dice in a hobby town.
Yeah, actually,
so you,
way back
you guys
when,
way back
up,
when,
picked it up when they were purging all their.
Well, we used to shop before that, but yeah, Hobby Town purged their Warhammer stuff like crazy. It was like 50 to 75% off.
75% off,
and we were just like,
we bought everything.
I spent all the money I had. Then I asked my parental units for money and stocked up as much as possible.
I spent my entire tax return, which was $950. I bought every single Warhammer miniature they had for the Lizardman army. Mm-hmm. Half of it's gone. I don't know where it went.
Yeah, sometimes,
but,
and also...
It was like $2,000 worth of miniatures I bought for $900.
Gaming stores can pop up out of the craziest places, because for a while, Lawrence didn't have one, and then Hometown Computers...
Bought a bunch
of Battlezone stock.
Yep,
and started selling RPG stuff, and that was just out of nowhere.
Yeah, you called themselves like Hometown Games.
Their sign still said Hometown Computers.
Yep,
and so I mean, if you didn't know that they had gaming stuff,
you had no idea. I remember
it's
that
It's an interesting
story.
Thing. Some places don't want to be associated with that, but some people are fine with it.
Yeah. The funny thing is Hometown Computers is no longer in existence, but Hometown Games, which is the offshoot that actually ran the actual role-playing games,
is still in existence
and is the only game store, it's one of the only game stores in Lawrence, unless Goblin Games,
which didn't last.
Okay.
There was far too much mildew in that place for it to last.
Oh.
They didn't have any customer service.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, but
Mike over at Hometown Games is a nice guy if he knows you.
Oh yeah.
If he doesn't know you, he's a little distrustful. But you know that's because he's had his store broken into like twice.
But at least you don't feel creepy going into that store.
He's a nice guy.
I don't like the store, but
because it's small, it's kind of.
But at least you don't feel creepy.
A lot of gaming stores are cozy like that.
Like, I would be okay with taking my wife in there.
Yeah.
But some gaming stores, a female walks in and it's like vampires around blood. Goobers just, you know.
Well, and that goes into the atmosphere of the store.
I mean,
different stores are going to attract different types of clientele, if you will.
Yes. And it's interesting to note that I have run into that with my wife as well. Going to one of the other gaming stores here in town, which I shall not name.
31st Century?
I will not name.
You won't name 31st Century Games?
I will not name the game store that I went to. It was not 31st Century Games.
Oh, okay.
And the people, all the guys, and they're like, it's a girl.
Because there's such thing as girl gamers.
And what shocked them horribly was the fact that my wife was picking up role-playing game books and asking me questions about them. I'm like, what? Mm-hmm. Well, could we use this one for what we're playing? And they're like, oh my God, it's a girl that games!
Real quick, on the history, I mean, here of the gaming store, it came about in the 90s.
Heavily in the 90s.
And like I said, a lot of times it was connected to another sort of establishment, but nowadays you can actually find purely a gaming store nowadays, and I think that's more of a recent thing.
Yes.
Because Comic Corner, even for the longest time, was just obviously it was just comics. Then it was Battlezone, but then it still had a comic book thing. But they had their LAN stuff, their computer gaming.
Yeah.
And some of the comic shops didn't make good gaming stores either, because I wasn't a big comic book person. So going into some of the comic stores looking for gaming stuff, sometimes, and this goes back to customer service and atmosphere, you would get this look of, well, I'm a comic geek.
Let's move on to that real quick. What do we look for in a gaming store?
I have to be treated like crap.
I like good customer service.
You look to be treated like crap?
No, not to be treated like crap.
Because we could treat you like crap for free, really. Yeah. Unless you really wanted to pay us to treat you like crap.
No, that's creepy.
One of the things I remember.
Not to be creepy.
Like that, dude.
One of the things I remember was going into the game store in Topeka. This was back early on. And
this would have been Gatekeeper?
What is now the Gatekeeper. Mm-hmm. And the guy behind the counter was a teenager, and he was reading a comic book. And I took a game book up to the front, and he says, I can't let you buy that. And I'm like, I'm sorry, why? I have the money for it. He says, I'm not selling those role-playing game crap to anybody. Mm-hmm. That's his specific words were, that is a
smurf
idea, and it'll be destroyed before the end of the decade. Funny thing was, is I never saw that guy there again, because I went to my dad and was crying because I was like 7 years old and I was being told I couldn't spend my money on what I wanted to buy, and my dad went ballistic on the guy and went to the manager and all hell broke loose. But yeah, I mean, it still sticks with me to this day. I'm 28 years old and I still remember when I was seven, and this was the Red D&D box set. It was my first own personal D&D item. And the guy told me he wasn't going to sell it to me because role-playing games were crap.
Well, I think that goes with the stigma of it. And we've talked a lot about
it was
the
bad
stigma
enough.
Of gaming.
Yeah, it was bad enough. We had the stigma in my family. You know, my dad was very open-minded, but his side of the family, they all thought I was going to, my brother and I were going to burn in hell because we were Satan worshippers because we were playing Dungeons and Dragons.
Did you get magical powers?
No.
Yeah.
I tried. I sacrificed
a
goat.
Did Blackleaf die?
Who?
No,
Blackleaf.
I don't know that one.
Chick Trax.
Check it out.
Dark Dungeons.
It's funny.
Oh, is that the one where the girl commits suicide?
Yes. Because
her character Blackleaf dies.
Because she's lame.
See, I was lucky enough to be raised in a family that didn't worry about stupid crap like that, so I never got exposed to any of that.
I remember when I was 13 years old, and I was getting some friends together to run a role-playing game.
And this is valid. I mean, this goes into why gaming stores haven't started becoming a big thing until more recently, the last several years.
Because of the open-minded thing. I remember having to go to the parents of each one of the kids that I was actually going to be gaming with, and I had to read from the front of the book where it said that this is a fantasy setting. This is not real. Mm-hmm. Anything that you read in this book is not a work of fiction. And it has no correspondence to real life. Any correspondence that is done towards real life needs to be observed and needs to be dealt with on a psychiatric level. Because parents were like, oh, if you're going to be playing that D&D, I don't want my child doing demon worship.
Running
and stuff.
Around, sewers.
Yeah. Running around steam tunnels, which
is
not a true story in iteration that
and
it's being
told
anyway.
And a lot of work,
but
if you really think about it. Who really wants to climb into a sewer? That's stinky.
Good Lord, no.
I'd rather stay around my table rolling some dice. I can't take my pop down there. I can't take
my
snack. There's rats.
I am far too fat and out of shape to be running around in steam tunnels.
I'm not climbing down. I'd get stuck.
I mean, please. I don't want to have to get a tetanus shot.
Well, I have to get a tetanus shot anyways, but it's been 10
years. That's just because you swallow rusty nails.
Yeah.
Hey, it works great for the freak shows.
And the uncomfortable silence.
We're now traveling in 1922, by the way. Just hurling through space.
Is the dial stuck?
It's stuck on the fast.
Kind of hit it with a hammer a couple times.
Okay, so if we go far back enough, do we go back to the front and then come?
No. Unfortunately, if we can't get this fast rewind switch unstuck, we're going to go back to the beginning of time and be destroyed.
That's okay. Oh. Then the Big Bang will happen. So we'll
Jeremy,
just be back here.
Get a hammer.
No,
I
don't need a hammer.
It with a hammer. That's the problem.
We don't need a hammer. We just need to identify which spring is actually attached to that so we can fix
the spring
because I'm sure the spring is broke.
Right.
Drill.
Anyway, what is it that you look for in a gaming store?
I look for customer service predominantly. I also look for someone who's actually going to remember that I've been to their gaming store before.
Light.
That is something that a lot of play that you don't run into much is it needs to be a well-lit establishment.
Yeah, actually,
I want to be able to see the products in front of me.
I like a well-lit gaming store, but above a well-lit gaming store, I like a well, naturally lit gaming store.
That's, mm-hmm. yeah.
That is nice.
And clean.
I mean, light is light, but yes, natural light is better. Clean is even better, yes.
I haven't got there yet. Yeah. I want a gaming store that is clean, that smells nice, and where I don't have to worry about dirt or grime when I'm actually crawling around on the floor looking in the bottom shelves for various products that are obviously hidden out of sight.
Sifting through the discount miniatures bin, yes.
Well, no, or sifting through the historical minis because they're on the bottom shelf because there's not a lot of them.
Right.
And so they don't get the high shelf space for the eye spot. I want staff that's knowledgeable about their products and mm-hmm. aren't going to treat me like crap if I don't know something about a product.
In this day and age, I'm a bit more lenient on that is because you can find out a good amount of information yourself online easily.
Yes, that's
but
true.
I think,
but I
think
really like
there is,
staff
there is
that knows
thing,
more.
Staff needs to at least know of the product and be able to tell you something about it and then not sound like they're reading off a cue card or something.
Sure.
I agree. I think that an employee should be able to know what they're peddling and know at least that what a game is, what a RPG is, what the board game is, that sort of thing, and don't just hire Joe Schmo off the street who doesn't know anything.
Yeah, which is one of the reasons why I do 99.9% of my business at Tabletop Games is because not only does am I recognized there, the owner of the store, I've been going there off and on since the store opened, remembered me from like I hadn't been there in like 3 years when I moved here, and he remembered me and remembered my name when I came through the door. When we walked in the door, he greeted you because he had just met you. He knew me. He goes, "Oh, hello, Nathan. How are you? I haven't seen you in years."
Some people might think that it's such a small thing, but it's that rapport at the instant you walk in. It's that recognition of, "Oh, hey, Jeremy. Hey, Jeremy. How are you doing?
And
what can help you find?"
And you can bring your wife in.
That's something is if you're married and if you're comfortable bringing your wife into the place,
she doesn't feel like they're drooling or staring.
That's because 99% of his clients are married, and they're all nice people.
It's a mature invite. It's a and store.
The other thing I really like about Tabletop is they have a separate room for their gaming tables.
Yes. Yeah,
it's in an entirely other section. They have the store. The storefront, etc., and then the gaming room is somewhere else.
Because you don't really want that out, because there are times where you have people off the street that are interested in some of it, and you don't want... Not all games are always appropriate all the time. Not meaning the game themselves, but sometimes games can get a little rowdy, and mm-hmm. you need to have that in a separate area, because it is a business.
And it's not just saying like, oh, we're playing, pimp the backhanding. No. You're playing D&D, but anyone who's played these games knows you can get a little rambunctious during these things.
And
you can get a little verbal.
You've got a store to run. Not to mention, I've always got irritated by going into a store and the person is too busy playing their game.
Yes.
And they won't serve me. And I'm like,
if they're sitting at
money.
One of the game tables playing a game and you have to go fetch them to make a purchase or to ask them a question, I think at that point walk out. Don't spend money.
Or
that
one
spot.
Of the most irritating ones, and this was the ones that were
that
they
or
had,
if it's one of their employees, tell the boss.
Yeah, or the ones that had computer games in the store, they would be sitting there and they would never look up and they'd be playing a game on their computer and never look at me, and they just
I mean, it goes for game stores or comic stores that I've gone into that I've not gone back to. Is if they're sitting there watching a movie or watching something on TV. And if they don't even acknowledge my presence, that annoys the hell out of me and I leave.
Yeah,
I agree.
I mean,
that
you're selling me on customer service. I could easily go and buy this product online, not get the instant gratification of having it right now, and I'll get it cheaper than I will buying it at your store. So the least you could do is make an attempt to be courteous.
Yeah.
An attempt to actually show that you give a damn.
Acknowledge my existence, because guess what? I have money. I may not have a lot of money, but I have money that I want to spend on games. So therefore, you don't have to worship me.
Case
you
in
do
point,
have to be
you know,
nice.
It's. I mean, everyone is all about support your local game store, and I'm all about supporting your local good gaming store.
Good gaming store.
And case in point is Player's Handbook 2 recently came out. My brother and I went and picked it up at Tabletop. Jeremy and Robin went to go pick their copy up.
Went to Tabletop
first, and Tabletop was sold out. Then they went to Borders.
Yes.
That I'm fine with. Yes, no, Borders doesn't need any more of our money. However, but Jeremy and Robin tried tabletop
to the gaming
store first.
You know? And we will always get to the gaming store.
I mean,
first.
if you have a game store out there and you like the gaming store, another pet peeve I have with people is people who will buy their stuff online then take it to the gaming store. Like, hey, I picked this up. I got it off Amazon for, you know, $20. And why are you bringing it to the game store to rub it in his face? I mean, really, come on. That's just rude. Yeah,
that is. I mean, really, that's like going into any business. It's like taking food from one store, restaurant to another restaurant and being like, you know, I only paid $5 for this.
Exactly. I've seen people do it. And, you know, it's especially like when 4th Ed first came out, Phil told us about some guys who, I mean, obviously, like, people were breaking the street date on the player's handbook left and right on the 4th edition books left and right. I mean, it's supposed to come out on Tuesday. Borders put it out on like Friday. And there were people apparently who were going and buying it, and then they were bringing it to tabletop and showing it off to him. You know,
and
it's
like, where do we buy ours?
Tabletop.
That's about mine. Thank you very much.
He had a nice little special deal there.
We've got a friend that does this sort of thing. He doesn't really bring it to a gaming store, but he does buy his stuff just pretty much always online, and it's always looking for the good deal. Now, if you're strapped for cash, that's great.
Yeah.
I understand that. But if you're not strapped for cash, and if it's worth that extra $5 or $10 to go to your local game store and give them money and help them keep in business, keep their lights on, I think that's worth it. If they treat you well, if they're a good store, great. And a lot of times, if you can't get it, or if they don't have it, they can get it for you.
Mm-hmm.
A good store is going to do that for you.
Mm-hmm.
That's really where I'm at with it.
That is true.
So I guess what I want in a gaming store is customer service. That's what they sell me on.
Atmosphere and customer service.
I mean, I want it to be a clean place.
Yeah.
I've been in enough gaming stores where it's just filthy, nasty, quality comics.
Dark, dank,
when
creepy.
before Lawrence passed the ordinance to stop smoking in public buildings, mm-hmm. I hated going to Quality Comics because they smoked in there, and everything had the smoker's film all over it. You know, so it's, you bought something there, and Stu did the same thing at Comic Corner. So
he bought
something there, you take it home, it smelled like smoke for you know 6, 7, 8 months.
Yeah, what we used to do with that, because we had that problem. My dad had stopped smoking and refused to
like
have
the,
smoking
the,
stuff
the
in the
cellophane
house.
The cellophane is yellowed.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just dirty.
We'd
it's
have
nasty.
To leave it out in the garage for like 4 days to let it air out before he'd let us even
and
bring it in the house.
You shouldn't have to air out stuff like that.
That's any
just
product.
Ridiculous.
And that's anytime. Any product.
And that's why I want a clean store. I want a store I can go to, pick it up, take it home, and play with
that
my new
everybody
toy.
Feels comfortable. You know, if I had children, I should be able to bring them to the gaming
exactly.
store.
I mean, thinking about like tabletop and places like that, if you had kids, I'd be perfectly happy taking my kids there, because it's a well-lit, nice atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
That's really it. And I guess what we're trying to say here with the gaming store is, if it's, you know, support your local game stores, support your local good game stores. As long as they're courteous to you, they try to run it like a business, and they try to actually service you as a customer, is what you want.
And if they are looking for feedback, I mean honest feedback, if mm-hmm. they don't care, they'll show it. And then therefore that store does not need to be there. So, but if they actually are struggling and they need feedback and they're willing to take feedback, give it to them. You know, talk to them about like what games you've seen.
That reminds me of the thing about talking to the guys at the game store, right?
Yeah.
I'm sort of on the fence on that. Is I like talking to Phil. I like talking to the employees there. I like talking to some of the other people there. But I really want to, I always try to watch the time and not dominate them.
Yes, exactly.
And not be that guy who's standing there saying, "So, have you played the new da da da?"
You don't
want to
do
on
that.
On. You know, chit chat with them. That's great. Mm-hmm. But if a customer comes in, don't distract them from doing their job.
That's true. But when I say talk to, I mean like if it's struggling and they're doing something really bad, mm-hmm. and they actually, if they want feedback.
If
a store is asking you, how can I improve, you should give them that.
I mean, a good store is going to do that. A good store is going to ask you, well, you know, how can I help you? Or a good store, you need to feel able to say, I'm looking for a board game. I've been coming here for a while, but I need a board game for something. I got $50 to spend. What do you recommend?
And actually, that goes back to having that separate gaming area. Mm-hmm. Is the Hangar Honors.
Right.
The groupies that seemed, because every place has groupies or somebody.
Right.
And for some reason, people think it's appropriate in a gaming store or a small store that they can hang out for
6 hours.
Yeah. If you have a separate gaming place, you can
happen all the time at Game Guy, let me tell you.
You can kind of push them into the gaming area. And if they come out and say something, you know, it's fine. But I never liked it. Felt uncomfortable. You know, I'd go in to buy something, and there's all these hanger-oners, and you're like, are they customers? Mm-hmm. I actually approached a couple of people, and they, I'm like, I need assistance. You know, they're behind the counter. I'm getting ready to give them money, and they're like, I don't work here.
To tell you this, I used to work at a used video game store in Lawrence called Game Guy. It's a great place. And we had a lot of people like that. And speaking from a retailer's perspective, and just in that setting, and we just did used video games and stuff like that. So, I mean, it's sort of along the same lines as a retail store for RPGs.
It was the same.
More or less. Speaking from that point of view, is if you had people that came in and just hung out, as a retailer, that annoyed the heck out of me.
Yeah.
Because you're taking up space and taking up my time. And you're basically a distraction for customers that are coming in.
Yeah, and it's uncomfortable. I remember going into Game Guy mm-hmm. to like look around for games and like, who works here? I know Ethan works here,
I mean,
but who else works here?
Yeah, granted, at an RPG store or board game, at a gaming store, basically, you're not going to have people trying out the game in the middle of the store unless that's where their gaming stuff is, that their gaming tables are. And it's not like you can crack it open, you know, and try it out right there. It's, you know, you can't throw down a quick, you know, 15-minute
D&D game.
D&D game happen. Or Arkham Horror game.
No, God, no.
15 minutes isn't long enough to set up the board for Arkham Horror.
15 minutes isn't even long enough to read the rules.
But I think the hanger...
Horror. I need a couple days.
The groupies and hanger-oners are kind of like atmosphere, though.
Yeah.
And you do need to...
I mean, it's not
bad
to have a couple in there as long as they're well-behaved.
Yeah, or you can hide them in the closet.
Mm-hmm.
If you can hide them in the closet, that's fine.
The other thing I want to point out that annoys me at bad gaming stores is parents who drop off their kids.
Yeah, again, uncomfortable.
What's with that?
It's like because they're obviously
really, that goes for any
they're going to babysit them. That's why they're there.
No, that's not.
I mean,
the
they're
going to
babysit
them.
Yeah. Obviously, that's what they're thinking.
That's a crock of crap. I mean, the best store sign I ever saw for that was children left unattended will be sold into slavery.
And no one would think about...
I really say children left unattended will be reported as abandoned.
Well, and think about that. Would
the
they
police will be called.
Would they do that at a big chain store like Walmart?
And would you do that at Walmart?
No.
God, no.
So why would you do that with your local friendly little store?
Yeah.
Unless they're going to buy a birthday present or mm-hmm. something, and you say, I'll be back in 15 minutes.
Yeah. As long as they clear it with the retail guy, the owner, the clerk,
and they show money...
Whatever.
And they spend the money,
but
they can't just sit there and babysit. That's not their job.
Gaming stores, and stores of the hobby type, are not. Crap! Now I can't think of the word I was thinking of. Shoot, I'm sorry. They're not nannies. One, they're not
daycare.
Daycare.
Thank you.
And the same thing.
They're not daycare centers, so you shouldn't be dropping your kids off to expect your local gaming store to be a daycare center, because what that does is that makes it difficult for everybody else who's in that store to do what they're there to do.
Mm-hmm.
Buy stuff or ask questions about products they're planning to buy or run the store.
Except I don't think that's just a small gaming store. That's a small store thing, because I've walked into used bookstores, like the nice, you know, homey feeling used bookstore, and looked around going, why are there these kids just hanging out here? Or that person's been here for like 8 hours.
Yes.
At least. You know, they're rooted to the ground. I remember visiting yesterday and they were still there. You know, I think it's kind of a people will just say, oh, it's a small business. I'm going to treat it like my house.
It's not your house.
Well,
it's a company.
Friendly is one thing, creepy and insensitive is another thing.
I think, really, getting down to it, I mean, what we all look for in game stores, it sounds like, is a clean establishment. A place that's run like a business.
Yeah.
Well lit, friendly, And overall, just good customer service.
Yes. Yes. Which in this area, all of these.
Which is especially important if you have a choice. If you have more than one to look at.
Yes. All of the requirements that we have listed are all met by specifically a game store. Now, most of the qualities are met by some of the other game stores in town, but all of the qualities that we have are met by specifically one game store, which is Tabletop.
Now, let me throw this out, though, because this causes a problem. What happens if randomly WotC decides they want to put stores in cities?
They already have stores.
They already have stores.
Not here.
No, not here.
In cities that I live. They put a store.
They have a lot less than they used to.
It's well lit. Mm-hmm. Their employees are trained. They're friendly. You know, what do you do?
The only problem with that is Wizards of the Coast, their stores sell specifically Wizards of the Coast products.
Right.
Well, true. But, I mean, do you support
the gaming store,
the original one?
It's really the sort of difference I'm seeing in it is
it the evil corporation versus
evil corporation motif? Yeah. But what I'm seeing though is think of it in the terms of a cell phone store. Is you have the mom and pop store?
They're all creepy though.
Those are creepy, yes. But then you have the ones that are like the T-Mobile stores.
No,
and
I hate all
stores
of them.
And stuff like that.
Yeah, me too. But
do you really want to go to those?
I don't
want to
go to any.
No.
No, you don't want to go to either of them.
But at the same time. You know, there are those stores that kind of are in this little niche of they're owned by some big corporation, but they're kind of a small town feel, and they're still run well.
Oh yeah,
and that's where I'm glad we don't have that choice. Because
always give the store a chance. Yeah. I mean, I'm always give the store a chance, but me, I'm a no second chances type of guy. So it's like, yeah, they piss me off, I'm out. I mean, Stu over at Comic Corner pissed me off years and years and years ago. I never forgave him.
So. And I have a friend.
And it's not anything he did to me. He was rude to my brother, and that pissed me off.
I have a friend who had a bad experience with someone with the gaming store here in town, and he refuses to go back. Yeah,
that happens.
And guess what? He refuses to go back. I mean, I've told him multiple times about how great a story. He's like, yeah, I know, but I had a bad experience.
Yeah,
unfortunately, he's not going back.
Was that?
It doesn't.
Was it Ben?
No.
No?
No, I'll tell you later.
Okay.
Anyway, I think that's...
I'm surprised. I've never had a bad experience at Tabletop, ever.
But that can happen anywhere.
It can happen anywhere.
It's one of those things. It's surprising.
A personal opinion, but, it's a personal, how you feel about a store. But I think, really, atmosphere, how they treat you.
Yeah,
exactly.
The feel, there's a vibe.
Oh, yeah.
If you go in and you're like, there's a bad vibe in this place, those people are dressed up like vampires.
Those places, and people listening to this will know what we're talking about is you just go into a place and it just feels wrong.
Or it looks
listen
wrong.
Listen to that
guy,
or it looks wrong, yeah.
There's just something about it that looks off.
If the creepy guys in the corner are drooling over your wife because she walked in the store, there's a problem.
Yeah.
If you smell something... And it seems to be a permanent fixture.
And don't like the smell.
There's something wrong. Mm-hmm. If they don't look up from their computer because they're playing computer games.
Well, to wrap it up, we're about 40 minutes on our discussion here. So
on our rant.
On our bit about gaming stores. Jeremy, what is the worst gaming store you've been in?
The worst gaming store?
Nathan, what's the worst gaming store you've been in?
A place called Games Unlimited, which was in Arkansas. It was the worst gaming store I've ever been in. There actually was someone sitting on the front porch playing an instrument. It wasn't a banjo.
I'm surprised they even allow gaming stores.
In Arkansas? We lived in Fayetteville, which is a fairly large town.
Okay.
Just across the border. Yeah. No, he was playing a guitar, but still, it was creepy. It's... And the game store owner... had that he had a wandering eye, and he didn't talk to you like when he was talking. He was like looking away from you, so you had no idea if he was actually talking to you or
talking
to someone
else. That is awesome.
And the store was dark, and the walls had like stains on them.
Murdered people.
This is a game store more like the remake of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yeah, it was the scariest game store
I've ever been in.
If you bought something and left, or if you didn't buy something and leave, did he chase after you with a bucket full of heads?
No. Okay. I brought an adventure for Middle Earth role playing.
From Murrah Prowl.
Yeah. back before, this was back before, you know, Merp stock was completely gone because they lost their license. And they still had a whole warehouse full of the stuff that hadn't been shipped out.
I've been in so many bad gaming stores. That is difficult. And they're so bad.
What's the worst one?
But some of them, it's like, they're all the worst one for various reasons. Like, one, I just didn't like the people. I knew the people. Mm. I didn't like the people. And I didn't like their store. The other one, because of they were high and mighty because they were comic book people. And they're like, oh, I'm just selling this gaming stuff just because.
It makes me money.
I don't know what money. What's up with
what's
that?
Up with it? We're all geeks.
Like you're a comic book store guy and you're getting all uppity because I'm buying an RPG.
The ones, there's just been so many. Really I can't even point out one. There's just been so many. So when I came to Kansas City, and actually Topeka too,
it's like a Toys R Us employee making fun of you for buying a toy at Walmart.
Yeah, it's like,
I mean, really,
what?
It's like, but seriously, really?
I think it'd be easier for me to pick out the good ones that I've been, like 31st Century. I liked for different reasons. Tabletop, I love.
See,
Tabletop.
31st will do in a pinch for me, but I just don't like the place, and I think the owner's a jackass.
Well,
see,
I've only been there once, though.
The owner is nice
thing.
To me, so I don't have any problems with the owner.
The owner's always nice to me. I've just seen him be rude to other people.
Oh. And then
those are actually his friends.
Gatekeeper, back when it was a game store, was actually pretty cool.
Well, Gatekeeper, oh, the guy who runs Gatekeeper is one of the nicest guys I know aside from Phil.
I know for a while, you know, my brother and I, when we would go get gaming
stuff, Jester's
we would
Attic.
Drive from Lawrence to Topeka to buy it, even though there was a game store in Lawrence.
When Jester's Attic was open, I think that was my first good experience.
As a gaming
store?
That
I didn't have to go anywhere else. I could just go down to Jester's Attic. It was well lit, and it was nice.
Yeah, he had all sorts
clean.
Of stuff, too.
And it was clean. Yeah. And he
you
was,
don't know how important
he
that
was a normal
be, really.
Person.
You don't know how important it is until you see a clean store like that. You go, I don't feel dirty. I don't walk out and want to scrape like some sort of strange film off my skin.
What's the computer one?
Hometown.
When they were Hometown Computers and they were selling some gaming stuff, I got that same attitude. That we're computer guys.
You're buying
we're just,
gaming stuff.
I'm like,
punched in the face.
If I could go anywhere else, I would.
You're the only gaming store left in town. Shut
now,
up.
I think the worst place I'd been to was Hometown Games until Goblin Games opened. Because then I went there and, oh my god, it was awful. I'm serious telling you. I mean, they had a lot of Jester's Attic old stock, and I felt sad for it. Because there was, like, literally this horrible mildew smell in the air. And it was one of those places where the clerk was sitting playing a magic game with someone.
Yeah.
And I didn't know who worked there.
I understand.
And I looked at their quote-unquote selection of gaming stuff, and it was pathetic.
I tried to be excited about it because it was new for a while. I bought some
I half
cards
expected
there.
To open books and see mold growing on some pages.
Oh, God.
I was just like, I didn't want to touch anything because I was afraid I would, you know, get a horrible disease.
It was sad. That's actually...
Speaking of me, I hate going to a gaming store and not buying something because I feel like I'm, you know, just wasting the person's time.
Yeah,
but that place, I just couldn't wait to get out of it.
I stopped buying... Like, this was back when I was, again, getting some magic stuff. I stopped going to Goblin Games. It was right next to me. I would go to Walmart.
Mm-hmm.
I would go to Hastings to buy my magic cards.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, screw this.
Yes.
Because, one, I know this place. I know these people.
And I
this
went
place
to Goblin Games once, and that was enough. It was just so...
It's
just
one of,
such
it's
a
one
dump.
Of my worst...
I never went there.
Except for the computer one, which I always...
Hometown Games. Hometown Computers.
See, that's how much I hated that one.
Yes. You blocked it from your mind.
I blocked it out. Because of that whole... But then various comic book stores...
I ran into the high and mighty thing at the Battle Zone when...
Yes.
Well, when Stu started just working at the one here in Kansas City, the guy who ran the one in Lawrence was just...
I didn't like Battle Zone there either. It was, again, one of those feelings that it was the only place to go.
Yeah.
My problem,
it's that only game in town idea.
Yeah.
They really went, oh, well, where else are you going to go?
Yeah.
Then the internet came around and we're like, hey, I'm going to go to Amazon.
Yeah.
See, now, though, we've got Tabletop. It's like, I'm going to go to Tabletop. And then if they don't have it and they can't get it for me, then I'll look online.
Robin and I will sometimes take trips just to down there to get it out. we know we can't really buy anything that day, but we're going to add to our mental list.
See, the thing is I won't go to tabletop unless I'm going to buy something. Because I refuse to leave the game store without buying anything because I feel horrible. Mm-hmm. One, they're a local gaming store. Two, they treat you with utmost respect, and as you know, and their customer service is great. I just can't walk out of there without buying something. Even if it's just a $5 set of dice, right. I have to buy something.
I look at it this way, though. I'm setting myself up for the future buy. Yeah. So if I can't buy something right then and there, you know, and I would never go in and be like, well, I'm not going to buy it here, even though they have it, and go, well, no, I just won't buy it.
Right.
But it's still that it's a nice place to visit and see if they have anything new and go, hey, I want to buy that next time. It's nice. I mean, even their historical gaming stuff has increased.
Oh, yeah.
It's nice to go in every, you know, couple months or whatever and just go, hey, that's new. That would be neat.
Yeah, I haven't been there in a while. I haven't bought
anything. I do like how they control their used stock. One thing about some gaming stores I noticed, the used stock would start to take over the store. Theirs is very neat and very controlled.
And I don't know how he controls it, but my guess is he probably takes a lot of the books that he doesn't sell and probably takes them to like some place like Half Price Bookstore.
I have no idea, but
that would probably be a good idea. I mean, he probably won't make any money off of it, but like anything any used books that I have that I would take in, more than likely what I would do is I would give them to him because if I have no use for them, I don't even care if I make 50 cents out of them.
Actually, I usually take them to half off and then I'll take the money and go down to the tabletop and buy something. I've done that multiple times.
Yeah, so have I. But I think that's good. A good stopping point for now, and we'll be back.
Get the newest releases at RPG Now. Only at RPG Now can you get the absolute latest and best releases from fantastic publishers like Fat Dragon Games, Green Ronin Publishing, and Wizards of the Coast. There are new products every single day. Come to RPGNow.com and get them the instant they're available.
And today on the lovely three-parter, I've got a gamer story sort of related to the whole April Fool's Day festivities. Nathan's got a rave, and Jeremy's got a review. So we'll go ahead and I will start with how I listed it out with the gamer story first. And we'll start with that.
The gamer story.
All right. It being April Fool's Day, what are we, 1929, 28?
Let me check the chronograph.
Like 1804?
We're at 1312.
1312. It being April Fool's Day, 1312. I'm going to tell you a little story about a game I ran on an April Fool's Day once. Appropriately, it was a Paranoia game. Now, this was Paranoia 2nd Edition, put out by West End Games. No longer in print, but you can get Paranoia from those people at Mongoose. It is their only good book. Anyway, I ran a... It was not a box adventure. It was a homebrew adventure. I believe I had three players in it. And it was a... your standard sort of adventure. I don't even remember what the mission is, and I'll tell you why here in a moment. The players started off in a lovely commissary when a tank bot came trundling in with a mop attached to its cannon, insisting that the characters were needed somewhere, as it was a tank bot in disguise as a jackalbot, just so you know. And it wanted to make sure that the players didn't tell anyone. But the players were being summoned for a lovely job. Well, hilarity ensued, and of course, I believe it was Corpor Metal decided to stage something at the to stage a demonstration at the lovely commissary, and the tank bot opened fire. Needless to say, one of the characters was wounded in this lovely exchange and crawled off into a hallway, and then decided to. Call for help on the local communications pad, and the computer, being as benevolent and trusting as it is, sent a doc bot out. Now, anyone who's played Paranoia knows that a DocBot is much more
dangerous,
scary and dangerous than a tank bot or a war bot even. Especially my DocBots, as they have tendency to have, you know, random tools that they use. Anyway, the DocBot came out and decided that it needed to, you know, triage. So what it ended up doing was his leg was broken, so first it needed to set the bone. So it planted one hand on his thigh and one hand at his ankle and then pulled until there was a popping sound. And then his leg was straight. And then it decided it needed to splint said leg. So it quickly placed a 2x4 onto the leg, and then it needed to affix it there with a nail gun. The leg was fine after lots of screaming. And the characters managed to get out of there remotely with their lives and minus a few clones. And then, of course, in standard Paranoia fashion, they didn't have high enough security clearance to know where the briefing room was. So they started wandering about. And I believe at one point they ran into some gremlins who were chucking stuff down a chute. But yes, these characters managed to actually get all together and managed to find, or eventually were brought to the briefing room after causing too much mayhem and chaos. They were briefed on their mission and then sent to PLC Outfitting Depot, where they proceeded to be assigned their equipment. Now, these three players, of course, have played Paranoia before, and know that most missions, if you've ever played Paranoia, most missions are, you're given a lot of crap that you have to carry around that really is not useless. So, when the characters received their ordnance, they received their standard issues of, you know, some more ammo for their laser pistols, a couple rifles, a cone rifle, unlabeled cone rifle shells, and individually packed walnuts. You know, of course, it was like 400 gross of individually packed walnuts. Shrink-wrapped, mind you. The characters then started arguing over who would get the cone rifle. Now, if you haven't played Paranoia, a cone rifle is essentially a rocket launcher. And it has several different types of shells,
they
varying
are
from solid slugs to hallucinogen to
high
explosive to tac nuke. Now, give you an idea, a tac nuke on a cone rifle. A cone rifle has a maximum range of, I believe, like 200 meters, right? A tac nuke has a blast radius of 180. So there is a possibility that you could fire it and survive. Maybe. If you're far enough away.
The wind's right,
and
there's no walls.
The GM is not feeling like a jackass. But if you're playing Paranoia, then obviously the GM is already feeling like a jackass. But they started arguing over who gets the cone rifle. And, of course, this sort of degraded into a minor firefight, where one guy got hold of the cone rifle, one guy got hold of the bag full of shells that, of course, were unlabeled, and, of course, randomized. So, of course, they start arguing over who gets what, and the third player is sort of sifting through everything and just deciding where the deciding that everyone else is going to get the individually packed walnuts and he's going to get all the weapons. Well, the guy with the cone rifle starts chasing the guy with the cone rifle shells around and tries to use the cone rifle as a club. Well, of course, this doesn't work so well as the other player who has the cone rifle shells decides to start using cone rifle shells as a club. Well, he reaches in, just grabs one, and starts and smacks the guy in the head, setting off the tac nuke that was inside. Long story short, they vaporized the equipment room, including all the individually packed walnuts.
Oh, poor walnuts.
When they all came to, or when their clones rendezvoused at research and development, I believe that there was a nice little bout of an anti-gravity belt that sort of reversed gravity on your internal organs. There were the ever-famous rocket boots. That sometimes worked. And, of course, you know, the usual stuff from research and development in a Paranoia game. Well, needless to say, the players never actually... the characters... in Paranoia, you have six clones, right, for each guy before you're completely out of the game. After the research and development, they had all run out of clones. And so the game was done, and they hadn't even made it to the mission. I felt that was a good start to the Paranoia game, and called it a night there. So, yeah. Highly recommend, if you're going to want to run a one-shot, just want to have fun with it, try Paranoia out. It's a load of fun.
Once my perfect world was gone, I knew you ruined everything in the nicest way.
The Rave.
Well, this is Nathan. I'm going to do a rave. Rave. I cannot speak today. A rave on what I've been doing for the past week now. I had surgery last week to correct some partially mental health.
Well, he has mental problems.
Yeah,
already,
but right? to correct some physical health ailments I had, and so I've been laid up in bed pretty much for ever. And in the interim,
and the change is now he makes the bionic sound.
No, but I pretty much had nothing else to do other than lie in bed and watch TV. Well, part of our tax return, one of the things we bought was we bought a Blu-ray player that does Netflix. So I queued up a ton of stuff on the Netflix Instant Watch and been watching a bunch of stuff, and I started watching Doctor Who. Now, I've seen all the new series that started in 2004.
Four, yeah.
And I'd watched most of it. I've seen bits and pieces of season four. I did not get a chance to sit down and watch season four when it was on because I had other stuff I was doing, like buying a house and moving in, stuff like that. But yeah, I know, not important stuff. But I remember watching the old Doctor Who with my dad when I was a kid on PBS and on late night TV. It was on after Lost in Space at 11 o'clock at night on Fridays and Saturdays when my dad would sleep on the hideaway bed before my parents got divorced. And so we'd sit down there and eat cheese and crackers and watch sci-fi shows. And I remember watching Doctor Who, and the first Doctor I ever watched was Tom Baker. So I thought he was really cool. And so I queued up a ton of Doctor Who's. You know, I got a couple John Pertwee. I actually have one Patrick Troughton. There's one Patrick Troughton and like half of the first season with the first Doctor.
William Hartnell.
William Hartnell, thank you. I'm still having problems with their names. I know a couple of them. There's Mr. Davison. There's Colin Baker. There's Tom Baker. John Pertwee, Patrick Troughton, William Hartnell. My favorite, which is... No, I just said his name like 20 minutes ago. Sylvester McCoy.
Yes.
And then there's the gentleman who was in the 1996 movie, which was bad. Whose name escapes me. But enough about the crappy movie because I don't want to talk about the movie.
Paul McGann.
Yeah, Paul McGann. But I started watching him, and I watched.
If anyone's wondering why I know all this, is because what's happening to him happened to me about 2 years ago. And I sat down, and for a year and a half, that's all I did was watch Doctor Who from beginning to end. So
I started watching, and the first one I watched, I figured I'd watch the oldest one I had in queue at the time, which was The Aztecs, right. Which is a William Hartnell.
Hartnell.
Mm-hmm. One. It was episode, I think, episode 16, 17, 18, and 19 from the first season. And it was... they tried to be as historically accurate as they could, but you know, when you look at it now, since it was done in 1963, that's not as accurate because we know a lot more about the culture now. But as of the time, it was accurate to what they thought about the Aztec culture.
Story number six, episodes 27 through 30.
Thank you. 27 through 30?
Mm-hmm.
Really? Was it that late?
Yep.
That must have been the last show for the season.
Yep.
How many episodes were there in the first season?
First season had 8 different stories, 42 episodes.
Holy cow. But I watched that, and I enjoyed it. Unfortunately, it kept Becca up, so I don't get to watch them in the bedroom at night anymore like I was before because the screams in the show keep wake her up. So after that, I watched the Crystal Key series for the Key of Time. I think that was what it was. which was the Tom Baker series, and they actually have the full season because the full season deals with that, getting the six pieces of the key.
It was the ongoing thing for that season.
Yeah, with
the Key of Time,
which was Tom Baker and I can't remember the actress that played her, but Romana, who was later replaced in the next season by Layla Ward, who played the princess in the last episode or in the last story arc for that series in 78. I've watched as much as I could of it so far. I haven't watched any Colin Baker. I just found they just actually released some Colin Baker ones to the Netflix Instant Queue today. So I queued them up. Haven't watched them yet. I'm going to watch The Green Terror, hopefully, later tonight, which is supposed to be a really good one with the third doctor, who is suddenly...
John Pertwee.
Yeah, John Pertwee. Thank you.
Sean Pertwee.
Is it Sean Pertwee?
It is Sean Pertwee.
But it says John.
It's John Pertwee. Sean Pertwee is his son.
Okay. I was going to say, but it says John Pertwee on the label.
Yeah, it's John Pertwee. Sean Pertwee is his son and is an actor nowadays. He was actually in... it's an actor you would actually recognize.
So have you guys read the comics?
Yes.
Some of them, yes.
I've read a couple of the ones that were actually done by the guy who did Watchmen. The guy who did Watchmen. Alan Moore did like a four-part miniseries.
Warren Ellis has done some, too.
I haven't read any of those. I listened to a couple of the radio dramas from that are actually with Paul McGann, and he's a really mean, nasty doctor. Like he tells you to do something.
I'm listening to the Big Finish ones now. So
I haven't listened to the Big Finish ones. I need to. The Paul McGann ones are a little different.
How
many doctors are there? There are 10.
Current one, David Tennant, is the 10th Doctor.
The 10th Doctor. And
that doesn't count the unofficial incarnations of him in other mediums.
Yeah. Because
there were actually two movies done with Peter Cushing as the Doctor.
Yeah, but those aren't classified as canon.
Since he's a Time Lord, really, they can all fit together.
Yes, well, yeah, he can regenerate 12 times, from what I understand.
He can regenerate 12 times to his 13th incarnation. Although we did learn, and this is totally, I know I'm a total geek, but we did learn that the Time Lords have the technology to give you back your regenerations. So we don't know if that's been done to him or not.
No, we don't know if that's been done or not, because there's...
So after, once he reaches his 13th incarnation, officially
that
would be, he
officially
can't...
That could be his last one.
It would be his last one.
Although I wouldn't be surprised if that does eventually happen, and he still regenerates again, because, I mean, he is the last Time Lord.
Yeah. Well, the thing is that's one of the interesting things. In the canon stuff from what I've read from the books that are canon, the genetic data and all the life data and history data of the planet of Gallifrey was removed from the planet of Gallifrey before the planet was destroyed. But anyways, I've been watching the series. I've been watching all the different shows and stuff. Still, as of this point, because of the length of time that he was the Doctor, Tom Baker is still one of the more interesting ones to watch.
This is the fishhook that's gone into his cheek.
Yeah, and it's pulling me.
Pulling him in.
Yeah.
It happened to me. I'm totally guilty.
Tom Baker, because he was the Doctor for 7 years, from 1974 to 1981, did tons of shows. And, you know, he's the most iconic Doctor for most people because he's the most seen.
And especially here in the States, his episodes with him are the most common ones to be
played.
Shown over here.
Yeah. When Sci-Fi Channel started re-showing Doctor Who, they started it from the beginning with all the episodes they could find, and they showed it for like the first 2 years that it was on every day at 12 o'clock in the noon. Every day they showed Doctor Who, an episode of Doctor Who, and it started from the earliest that they could get their hands on through as many of the episodes as they could find. So there was large gaps that were missing, but all of Tom Baker was played.
So basically, if they get a new actor, they kill him off and say it's a new incarnation.
Yes.
Yes.
They don't ever try to say, well, it's just...
Well, it's because he's an alien.
He's
And really, from what I understand, the original story is when William Hartnell left the role, and he was actually forced out of the role, from what I understand.
Uh-huh.
He had some failing health issues. And they brought in a new guy. The producer at the time, they were sort of going, what are we going to do? How are we going to do this? And then one guy's like, well, he's an alien. So let's just have him change. And they went, oh, okay, let's do that.
Yeah, and it worked.
But it's been that way ever since.
But he does that in the comic, too.
Uh-huh. Yeah, oh, yeah. Right. The interesting thing is I'd always watched Tom Baker, because that was the ones that you saw a lot of. But with the fact that I can do the instant cue thing, I started watching actually the last Doctor of the Classic series, which was Sylvester McCoy.
Mm-hmm.
And every episode I've watched with him, I've really liked. I watched the Curse of Fenric, which was the first one I watched, and then I was queuing up. I was watching another one earlier, but I had to stop because everybody started calling me. Like within 20 minutes, I had like 15 phone calls, but I can't remember what it is. But I like.
I just started calling you left and right.
I like the Sylvester McCoy Doctor. He's right on the cusp of being nasty, mm-hmm. but he's scheming about it. And I like the fact that he wears a vest that's covered in question marks, which is very amusing.
I did not know it was this big.
Oh yeah, it went for 26 seasons before.
Doctor Who was an institution.
Yeah,
obviously,
it's been running since 1963. Ran from 63 to 89,
and then had a hiatus.
And then it never actually got officially canceled.
No, it's never been canceled.
It went on extended hiatus. Until they did a TV movie in 96. That didn't catch on.
Yeah, that was terrible.
And then the new series started in 05.
Because I've seen parts of the new series.
Yes, and it is connected all the way back.
All of it is all one contiguous piece. But I really like Sylvester McCoy. And what's really sad is he was the Doctor from 87 to 89. Mm-hmm. He was only there for 3 seasons. And everything I've seen with him so far, I've really liked, which is going to suck because he's only going to have like 15 story arcs.
I'll tell you right now, there are some really bad episodes
yeah.
in his time.
And then they yeah, did a runoff.
He suffered from bad writing. There was yeah. bad,
but
bad
he,
episodes.
He's a good time. Doctor.
There's
but,
a reason why it went on hiatus.
But with Doctor yeah. Who, that's where they did the spinoff of Torchwood.
Yes.
Torchwood
is
those
from...
Are all the more, those are all the recent ones.
Well, true, but because that gentleman was in a Doctor
yeah,
Who episode.
Captain Jack Harkness.
Yeah, Captain
Jack. Yeah. He was in
a couple episodes, even like 4 or 5 episodes of the Christopher Eccleston.
He was in the last 5 episodes.
I'm going to have to watch the original ones then.
Yeah, the original ones. I went into it, I was expecting it just something that I could fall asleep to.
I couldn't sleep.
So I just queued up a bunch and figured I'd fall asleep. And I was so engrossed with them that I'd finish one, which is an hour and a half, because they're usually 4 or 5 30-minute episodes, and I would start another one on the queue. I was staying up till like 6 o'clock in the morning. Becca was getting up and going to work, and I was still up watching Doctor Who. Mm-hmm. I mean,
they're really well done.
This
is the scope of what we're talking about here, okay? The new series generally does 13 to 14
episodes,
hour-long episodes. The old show was
30-minute episodes.
Was 30-minute or 20-minute long episodes. Mm-hmm. Okay, and then they do 2 to 4 or even 6 or 10 ones in a series. That would be
a single story arc.
Uh-huh. There were 159 different stories, which composed of 700 episodes.
Jeez.
Yes.
I'm not going to.
And that does not
one
include specials.
That there's too many fans. I'm not ever going to one of their conventions.
Oh, I would go just to get the signatures of the people.
It's not nearly as big here as it is in Britain.
Yeah. It's like the Warhammer thing. Warhammer is not as big here as it is in Europe. It's big in Europe. And
I guess I have a lot of catching up to do with Doctor Who.
Well, one of the things I'm finding out is that a lot of the episodes are impossible to find now. And most of season...
Not as many as there used to be.
Yeah.
But.
Seasons 3 and 4 are almost impossible to find now. Mm-hmm. Almost completely impossible. And season 4, for which was the last of William Hartnell, he only did 2 story arcs in that before his character was, mm-hmm. was killed off. And the interesting thing is the last episode, which was the Forgotten...
Last with...
with William Hartnell was like...
Was the 10th planet.
The 10th planet. They've recovered the first 3 episodes of the
four-part storyline. They've recovered the first
three
parts
of
the
it.
Last part they
is
have
completely degraded. All they have is
it's not even a degraded thing. It's they pitched them.
Well,
you know? in the 70s they ran through a bit uh-huh. where they decided the BBC needed to clear out space, and so they either recorded over or destroyed film. To get
yeah.
room in their stock, and they did it to Doctor Who.
The season 4, the 10th planet, video footage has been found, but it is incredibly degraded form. It is a copy that was found in the United States, and the only thing that is legible or visible on the screen that you can see with any sort of clarity is the actual regeneration sequence mm-hmm. at the end. And it is so horrible, it's still hard to tell. But the thing is it's like most of season 3, all of season 4, including when it moved over into the new Doctor,
mm-hmm.
is
yeah the first
Patrick Troughton's story, The Power of the Daleks, is almost entirely
gone. But the thing is,
Do they have the audio for it?
They still have the audio.
They have audio for all of them.
Then what they should
tons of fans would actually, when the show was on, little kids, they would actually record using their tape deck, or their reel-to-reel tape deck even, and they would record it so they could play it during the week and listen to it, and people kept those.
Well, they should just run those then as podcasts or something.
Well, they do. They run them as radio dramas.
BBC has a there's a company BBC hired a company to actually reconstruct them and to remaster them and then release them. So.
Yeah, so they're going to come out. They have the audio for it. We just have no idea when. But almost all of Patrick Troughton, except for a couple story arcs, is gone. So it's like there's large chunks that are missing. Now you can find it, and you can find it illegally if you look around online. But it's going to take a lot of digging to find just even the audio
like the Sonic
files.
Screwdriver? Patrick Troughton came up with
it was
in a Patrick Troughton story.
Yeah, and it stuck through all the way through
The Sixth Doctor had it, but it got destroyed.
Yeah,
well, it'd be
Seventh Doctor
to
didn't have it, but the Eighth
it
Doctor
radio.
Started to make a new one.
Yes,
but the show is just it's massive, and I did not go into it expecting to really like it. And now that I've actually started watching it, I really like it.
Like the new ones.
The new ones are really, really good. But the thing is the way they do the stories is so entirely different. And there's just something about there's some charm about the way they did the old stories that just really captivates me. I mean, I can watch the new Doctor Who series, but unlike with the old Doctor Who, I can't sit and watch the new Doctor Who for like 6 hours on end. With the old Doctor Who, I can't. I don't know why. It's not healthy, I can tell you that, but the thing is it's fascinating. And the fact that what they could do with the budget they have is incredible.
Fun.
Yeah, and apparently it used to be considered a horrifying show. You know, it was terrifying for kids and stuff.
And the new show is still considered a kid's show.
That's not a kid's show.
By our standards, it's not a kid's show.
Yeah. That's
that show is not a kid's show.
By our standards, it's not a kid's show. But the Daleks
are
terrifying.
The British
are
crazy.
You know? And the British have a saying of they'll watch it from behind the sofa, and that comes from Doctor Who.
Yeah.
Because the Daleks would scare you so much, you'd go hide behind the sofa, but you still had to watch.
You had to peek. Yeah. Long story short on my rave here is I'm really digging the old Doctor Who. My only rant part of this is damn it, BBC. Get all the episodes together, put them in the seasons that you guys can put together, and sell them in the season packets. I want the whole stories for the seasons. I hate this having to flip around trying to find the different shows in the seasons. Even though I have the guide from the classic Doctor Who, it's still hard to find the actual episodes. You know, they're not all of them are out.
They don't release them very quickly, especially over here.
Yeah, and I want the whole seasons. You know, damn it, I will buy the whole seasons. I know it would be expensive, probably $200, because an average season is anywhere from 23 to 60 episodes. But the thing is
They have sets. I know they released the first set,
which has the complete
first
season,
which is 27 discs. Is $500.
Holy goat balls!
Yeah, you can buy the first full season. Which is the only season I know that they have the full season of.
Other than the new series.
Yeah, other than the new series. And it's $150. The new series are $75.
A lot of the problems comes from what I understand, it's what we run to in the States, is there's a lot of legal problems because they sold individual episodes out to
various different companies.
Various different broadcast stations. And so it's just a matter of getting those rights back. So,
yeah.
And some places we'd be like, wait a minute.
Way too much history for me to even want to attempt to even walk close to one of those conventions for fear of being eaten.
Oh, it's good, clean fun. The show is great. And I hardly recommend it to anybody who has not watched the old Doctor Who but has watched the new one and likes the new one.
Check out some
of the older stuff.
If you want to watch a show that is fundamentally not an American science fiction program... Watch Doctor Who.
I did like the new ones, how different it was from anything I've seen.
Seriously.
The old ones are the exact same way.
Yeah.
They are.
The old ones are the same way. It's like, yeah, aliens. Okay, then. I'm going to go over here now.
Yeah, the people aren't like, oh my god, aliens, pull out
the
guns, kill them.
Oh my god, aliens. It's just, it's not all explained away at the end.
Yeah.
Like, no, those weren't aliens. That was swamp gas. No,
those
were aliens.
Those were aliens.
Well, see, and usually ends with the doctor going, well, see ya, and leaving.
Yeah, getting into the TARDIS and going.
So there's no, okay, what happened at, anyway, where's the doctor going now? And it is amusing that it took the United States 40 years to pick up on it. But the Doctor Who had story arcs, and they had like one series would lead into the next series, which would lead to the next story, which would lead to the next story, usually. Uh-huh. And so that was always kind
that's,
of fun.
That started in the,
where's
in the first
the radio
season.
Shows? Where can you get the radio shows?
You have they have a subscription based form.
It's a subscription based thing. There's like you said, there's different ones. There's the Paul McGann series,
which are now officially canon.
Yeah,
they're doing official canon ones.
There's also
they're
there
on
are,
season
there
two
are novels,
of that.
And there are there's this company called Big Finish Audio that the BBC has hired, and they do
to
original
do audio plays.
Doctor Who radio dramas in the spirit of the old series. So it's, I mean, it has the intro music, and then every 20 minutes there's a cliffhanger, and you have the outro music, and then the intro music comes back, and it comes. And they usually involve the 5th, 6th, 7th, and 8th Doctors.
Which is cool, in my opinion.
They're fun. It's good, clean fun. It really is. Yeah. Anyway, I sort of jumped in there a bit much.
Yeah, but yeah, like I said, I grew up with Tom Baker, the 4th Doctor, and really liked him. But now that I've actually seen the 8th Doctor, Sylvester McCoy, I love that the shows that I've seen. Ethan says there's a lot of ones that are bad. I haven't seen any of the bad ones yet, but I know the last ones that they've
been
released.
The ones that are bad are bad.
Are, yeah, like the ones with the kitlings.
The last episode of the last episode?
Survival.
Wow, that was... wow, yeah. Bad.
But I wouldn't mind seeing
not
more...
Not saying it's a perfect series, mind you. There are some bad episodes. Wow. Yeah.
It's like anything that goes that long, you're going to have episodes that
have
aren't
some dogs
received.
Sometimes 10 dogs.
Yeah, canine. Yeah, K-9 is a robotic dog that Tom Baker, the 4th Doctor, had with him a lot. He's also the first one that I know of. It was either him or Patrick Troughton that introduced jelly babies.
No, that was Tom Baker.
Was that Tom Baker? Mm-hmm. It's just funny. He pulls out this little white bag, and he's sitting there. He's eating something. And people are like, we're all going to die. And he goes, jelly baby.
Would you like a jelly baby?
And they're like...
He'd also use it just to break the ice. He'd like be caught somewhere he's not supposed to be like, would you like a jelly baby?
Mm-hmm. And one of the episodes watching the Pirate Planet... He distracted this guard by taking the bag, and he ripped a piece off like a grenade and chucked it onto the car, the hover car. The guy got out, and he's like looking around trying to figure out what it was, and he turns around, and they're in the car waving as they drive off. It was just funny. He's just like, and you see jelly babies like fly all over the place. For those of you who haven't had a jelly baby, it's basically it's pure sugar in the shape of a kid.
Yeah.
They were a World War II treat that became really popular.
Anyway.
But yeah, good shows. Check it out.
That's a long range, so we'll go.
The review.
And since that rave went on way too long, you know, because some of us are long-winded like me.
And me.
Yeah.
Holy
you know, We get a little carried away when you mention the doctor and stuff.
I was nuts.
Jeremy's not going to do the review today. We're going to save that for next time.
Next week.
So really, we get a two-parter with an extra long bit in there. So we'll be back after this.
RPGNow.com, the leading source for indie RPGs on the web. Visit them at www.rpgnow.com and pick up a few PDFs for your electronic gaming shelf. They've got gaming products for D20, 4th Edition, Mutants and Masterminds, and a variety of other products as well. Check them out at RPGNow.com.
And we're back, aren't we? We've managed to mess with the machine and
Hit it with the hammer enough times.
We are back in 2009.
What that spring was.
We are in the right time.
Yeah, the spring was busted. I broke out my soldering kit.
We're hopefully in the right place
April
and dimension.
Fool's Day, 2009. Hopefully,
we haven't looked outside yet.
Yeah, haven't looked out. Well, we can't look outside. We're in an underground layer.
Yes, but when we leave,
look at the scanner to see what's up top side. Really.
Well, the atmospheric
maybe it's
and oxygen
donuts. Something got with the basket.
The atmospheric and oxygen readings on the computer system state that everything is as normal for us.
So hopefully
doesn't
we're
mean
back.
That the sky's not red. But
if you are a fish man listening to us, or if you're half man, half cat, or if you're half man, half human, or if we found the planet of the apes. Hey, you know, as long as you listen to the show, we don't care. We do have some random encounters to go over before we run off, though. I got a email from Brian Billow. Hi, my name is Brian. I live in the Arctic wasteland known as Canada, Edmonton, Alberta, to be specific.
Canada.
Hey, we're all Canadians at heart. We are Canadians.
Yeah. Yes.
We're not Canadian, but we could be. I don't really remember how I got into listening to your podcast, Keep on the Shadowfell, but having been a fan of D&D from way back, first and second editions, it brought back many fond memories. I haven't seen any mention on your website of the game Paranoia, published by West End Games. The game is bar none the funnest and funniest game I've ever played. Completely bizarre and requiring a lot of lateral thought, I think a podcast of you guys playing that would be a lot of fun. By the way, the novel Paranoia, Nobody Knows the Trouble I've Shot, was exactly how we played the game. I just wanted to drop a quick line and say hello and tell you how much I enjoyed that series of podcasts. I will continue to look for more. P.S. I don't really live in the Antarctic wasteland, but it's pretty cold most of the year.
Well,
and as you listening to the show, obviously I have heard of Paranoia, and I will run it again.
Yes, and we've played Paranoia.
Yeah. We've all played Paranoia, yes.
Yes, I'm no good at it because I end up usually getting myself killed before anything ever happens.
But that's good in Paranoia. You just want to really put, you know, what you do is you want to blame that on other people.
Yeah, so I'm the guy quest. That like spends, you know, when you're building the character, you can spend points to buy additional clothes that become slowly degraded as time goes on. I'm the person that spends points on that because I need them.
Yes.
Because I end up
we could do
killed.
A Paranoia one shot and record it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'd be
fun. And I intend to do that at some point. I don't know when, but it will happen.
But right now we're doing Deadlands, damn it.
Yes, Deadlands right now. But but thanks, Brian, for listening to the show. And those of you who aren't listening to it, Keep on the Shadowfell is completed. We have finished, finally, after 43 weeks, finished the first D&D 4th Edition adventure, Keep on the Shadowfell, and it is up on our website at CanadianCrusaders.com.
And we'll be moving to Tolis at some point.
We'll be moving back to our Tallest game, updated to 4th edition, probably sometime in May.
Which we'll probably record.
Which we will record. Which, not even probably we will.
Which sounds really cool. That would be something I would like to get into at some point in time. Because I'd like to try the Tallest setting, and I need to play the 4th edition setting before
I'll
reserve any judgment.
Well, at some point, I'll be finishing off my northern campaign and then starting Thunder Rift.
Yeah, Thunder Rift is going to be awesome.
Yes, and I think I will continue running my Deadlands thing on Sundays, at least until I would like to just finish the thing. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm sorry I haven't made it to the last couple, but I have extenuating circumstances.
Bah, elf. Anyway, thanks for the email, Brian. Keep listening and keep sending us emails. That's not the email we got, but I want to point out something. Those of you who listen to one of our other shows. I mean, we are part of the Vorpal Network, and there's another show on this Vorpal Network called The Tome Show, run by
Jeff Greiner.
Some guy named Jeff Greiner, but we don't like consorting with him too much because he's in North Carolina or something.
I don't think he exists, personally.
No, he does exist. We've met him.
No, that was all in my
head. Yeah, but anyway, he put up his 100th episode celebrating D&D the other day, it's what he said.
And of course, the Tome couldn't do a big episode like this without the losers over at Gamers Haven sticking their nose into my business. Stupid guys want to be me so bad, they're even my partners over at the Vorpal Network.
Yeah, Jeff, man, we know that we started podcasting before you, and we know that you've now hit the 100th episode mark before us. But I'm sorry, dude. Really, it's, you know...
It's the mongoose effect.
It is. I mean, it's totally the Mongoose effect. It's that shotgun
it's
approach.
It's the shotgun approach.
And I got to say, you know, slow and steady wins the race. We are the tortoise, you are the hare. Keep trying there, man. I know you want to be us, but it's just not going to happen because really you're just one man. You're not three men.
It's the unholy triumvirate.
We are the unholy triumvirate. But, Jeff, we love you sometimes. But, you know, you just keep trying, man. Just keep trying. You know, I know it's hard being out there in South Carolina and Arkansas, wherever the heck you are. You know, just watch for banjos and have a good day, man.
Don't go down any back roads without a spare tire.
Yeah.
This concludes the broadcast from World Control.
You've been listening to the Gamers Haven Podcast. You can find us on the web at www.canadiancrusaders.com. The Gamers Haven Podcast is a member of the Vorpal Network at www.vorpalnetwork.com. Gamers Haven and Thousand Monkey Productions are copyright 2008 and is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Sharealike 3.0 United States license, some rights reserved. Stop by our website to check out our actual play feed, fill out our feedback guest book, or hit us on the forums. Music on the show is used with permission by Joe Hero Band, www.joehero.com, and this has been a Thousand Monkeys production.
Friday night and we're headed for the drive-in. You were mad at something you thought I said. Thought a night out with you and me and BC would make everything alright. I thought you might like an Evil Dead marathon, watching Ash wreck and shop with his chainsaw. You were gone before he made it to the workshop. Now I'm standing here alone.
Sensors indicate fluctuations in temporal barrier.
Source located. Cutters locked. Phase 1 completed. Initiating phase 2.
Teleportation coordinates confirmed. Prepare for transference. I obey.